This is 1A. I'm Todd Zwillig in for Joshua Johnson in Washington. In the early 2000s, Doug Jones did something many viewed as impossible. He prosecuted and secured the convictions of two Klan members responsible for the 16th Street church bombing. Four young black girls were murdered during that terrorist attack. Their names were Addie Mae Collins, Cynthia Wesley, Carol Robertson, and Denise McNair. In 2017, Doug Jones did the seemingly impossible once again when he won election to the Senate from Alabama, replacing former Attorney General Jeff Sessions and defeating his Republican rival Roy Moore in a special election. Doug Jones became the first Democrat in a quarter century to win an Alabama Senate seat, and his razor-thin margin of victory was secured in part on the strength of the black vote and black women in particular. He's got hopes now for re-election in 2020, but it will not be easy. The analysts say not even likely. He joins me now from WBHM in Birmingham, Alabama. Senator Doug Jones, welcome to 1A.
Hey, thanks, Todd. Thanks for having me so much.
And by the way, a note to 1A listeners, stick with us through the end of the hour. We have a very special tribute to the Apollo 11 moon landing. We're in the 50th anniversary month. We're going to talk to the senator, and then you want to stick with us for that as well. Senator, back to you. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Now, Senator Doug Jones, they say that you are the most vulnerable Democrat in the United States Senate. Maybe it's you. Maybe it's Joe Manchin of West Virginia. But you're running for your first full term in one of the reddest states in America. According to 538, 27 points more Republican than it is Democrat. Only this time, President Trump is on the ballot. He wasn't the last time when you won in 2017. Are you feeling vulnerable these days?
No, I don't feel vulnerable at all. In fact, I feel very good. We hit the ground running, Todd. I had 3 weeks between the election and getting in to Washington, getting sworn in, building a staff. We put together a great staff. We've been diving into the issues, and we've been doing exactly what I said I would do. And that is look at those kitchen table issues, the issues that people talk about every day at their kitchen table, whether it is their healthcare, whether it's jobs, whether it's trying to lift their wages, whether it's education for their kids, bringing in good jobs to the state. We've been doing those things. And wherever we go, we get a very, very positive response. Not everybody's going to agree with everything I do. I get that. And they shouldn't. But that's why we are having dialogues, not the kind of monologues you see primarily in these political worlds these days. We're talking to people. And more importantly, we're listening to people.
Well, everybody loves dialogues. Everybody loves jobs and education. There's no doubt about it. Senator, I'm not giving you any news. Alabama is a very, very red place. Your last election was a special election. President Trump wasn't at the top of the ballot. Roy Moore, we'll talk about him, was a lot of things, but maybe one of the easiest people to beat because of his scandals and other troubles. You may not have any of those advantages this time around. So we're going to talk about this, but it's going to take a lot more than dialogues and job promises, right?
No, absolutely. I think it takes a record, and that's what we've been building the last 18 months. And for the next 18 months, we'll be getting that record. It's a record I'm very proud of. I mean, again, not everybody's going to agree with this record, but we have been doing a lot of things in the Senate to help the state. We've been working to bring in things with the defense industry and the NDAA now that I'm on Armed Services Committee. We've been doing things talking about rural health. Healthcare is still a driving issue in this state. And while the Trump administration is trying to dismantle the ACA, we're trying to keep that. We're trying to do things for maternal health, infant mortality. We're trying to get rural health, keep our rural hospitals open. You can't change things overnight, but people respond to the things that we've done and what we are doing. And yes, Alabama has generally voted Republican over the last 20 years or so, but at the same time, the Democratic Party in this state has been virtually non-existent, and we have been building that up. We've also been giving people options and giving people choices. You know, the thing that I heard the most as we were traveling around the state during the campaign and over the last year is just simply thank you. Thank you for being another voice and another option. And people respond to that. They like the way we try to bring people in, work in a bipartisan way, but also reaching across the within the aisle, within the Democratic Party, to get people to see things the way that's going to help Alabama.
African-Americans and African-American women in particular were not just key, I mean, absolutely essential to your victory in 2017. The analysts, they say that Doug Jones has no chance in Alabama unless African Americans, and especially African American women, come out in droves in this election. Do you think that's true? And then the follow-on question is obviously, what have you done specifically for the black constituency in your state to give them all the reasons they need to come out like they did in 2017?
Well, first of all, I don't know who in the world they are. I keep hearing they say this.
They are the analysts. They are the pundits.
Yeah,
they are.
But the analysts haven't really done the work and the talk and to see. They've never seen a Democrat in the last 20 years that's done the kind of things, been on the ground the way that we have been on the ground, reaching people and talking to people, doing the kind of town halls like we did in Florence, Alabama this week, like we've done at Auburn University. They are just sitting in a little room somewhere writing and trying to look at historical data, which we threw out the window in 2017. And so I feel good about where we are. Now, getting back to the specifics of the questions, one of the things that unfortunately I think politicians often do is they get elected and they have these constituencies out there and they say, well, we'll see you next year, 4 years or 6 years when the election rolls around. We haven't done that. We have been back in those communities trying to do all that we can to help. Again, healthcare is as important in the black community in Alabama as it is anywhere else, perhaps more so. Black women are twice as likely to have difficulties in pregnancy than white women. They're more likely to die during a pregnancy. We've been doing things for maternal health and trying to study the health of particularly women of color. We've been doing a lot for our HBCUs. Historically black colleges and universities have often, they've been funded, but they've often been short, gotten a short shrift on a lot of the funding. First thing that we did was to try to get letters with the appropriations process. We secured a 14% funding increase for HBCUs. Alabama has more HBCUs than any state in the country. And that 14% increase was huge because they are also the lifeblood of those communities. So we've been going back to each of those communities, whether it is Selma in the Black Belt, whether it is in Birmingham and other places, to try to make sure we're responding to those needs. And I think we've been doing that. And I'll tell you, wherever I go, it seems to be the case because people are already coming up to me wanting to start knocking on doors, making the phone call. So the proof will be in November of 2020, but,
all right.
I don't listen to analysts. I'll put it that way.
All right. Well, let me stop you there, Senator. I want to remind 1A listeners that we welcome your input and we welcome your questions if you have them for Senator Doug Jones, the blue standard bearer in the very, very reddest of states. You can email us. You can contact on our Facebook page. You can always tweet us at 1A while we have Senator Doug Jones here. Senator, some of the issues, your pro-choice, multiple states have passed new laws restricting individuals' right to abortion, including your state in Alabama, where the Republican governor Kay Ivey signed a bill into law that makes performing an abortion procedure a felony punishable by up to 99 years in prison after a certain point. You've come out against that. But there's another issue in your state as well. Marsha Johnson is a black woman from Alabama who's being charged with the death of her fetus after she was shot in the stomach during an altercation with another woman. This case has made national news. You're pro-choice, but how do you feel about charging Ms. Johnson in this case?
Well, I spent 8 years as a prosecutor, 4 as an assistant U.S. attorney and 4 as U.S. attorney. I would have never charged her. I think that is stretching a law that has been on the books. I mean, people think that that is a part of this new law. It's really not. That law protecting the unborn has been on the books for a long time in Alabama. I think that it is stretching that to a point that it's I certainly wouldn't have done that. I don't think that there is a way that you can do that. The perpetrator who shot the firearm, they need to look at that and see where that is. If it was a self-defense case, so be it. Don't charge that person. But I think it's a real stretch to charge her with manslaughter based on a law that has been on the books for a long time. I just think it's wrong, and I'm hopefully that the local district attorney here will have a change of heart. The lead prosecutor in the case was out of the country when that case was presented to a grand jury.
I spent a little bit of time in Huntsville recently, Senator. It won't be news to anyone that abortion is a huge issue in your state. Look, you staked out your pro-choice position. Alabama is very conservative when it comes to abortion. A lot of those people people won't vote for you anyway. But does it make it tougher that these new restrictive laws have become such a marquee issue in states like yours now?
No, I really don't think it is. I really think it's a wake-up call for most people in Alabama, because while the state is generally considers themselves pro-life, they are also pro-choice when it comes to certain exceptions to these abortion laws. This abortion law is so extreme. The people of this state, everything that we have seen, everything we've heard, whether it's polling, whether it's our own work, says that the people of Alabama overwhelmingly reject a law that is this extreme. What this law represents is really a gerrymandered legislature that only answers to a small fraction of the voters in their particular districts. It doesn't represent the people of this state. They are generally, as I said, pro-life. But they also do not like the extremes. I think that this gives us a really interesting opportunity to really let people understand that abortion in this country has become a political weapon. It's become a weapon for the right. It's become a weapon for the left. What we need to be doing is focusing back on health, healthcare issues that are important to this state, healthcare issues for infants, for children, or for the unborn. Everyone needs to have better health than we have in Alabama. We need to expand Medicaid. We need to give women better access to health care. We need to do those things that will reduce the number of women who have to make this most difficult of choices. This gives us an opportunity to talk about that and not use it as a political weapon.
Coming up on a break, Senator, that's Democratic Senator Doug Jones running for re-election in the very red state of Alabama. We'll have more with the senator on his voting record and on who he might face in the next election. I'm Todd Zwillick. Glad to be with you. This is 1A from WAMU and NPR. Welcome back to 1A. It's Todd Zwillick in for Joshua Johnson in Washington. I'm speaking with Democratic Senator from Alabama, Doug Jones, and we'd love to hear from you as well. What questions do you have for the senator? He's running for re-election 2020. Comments on our Facebook page. You can tweet us at 1A. The email address is always 1A@WAMU.org. We got this question on Twitter. I believe the last Democrat to win in Alabama a Senate seat was Shelby, who defected to the Republican Party. Will Doug Jones trade his blue flag to stay senator? Senator Jones, you want to take that one? Are you going to win as a Democrat and then become a Republican to stay safe?
No, absolutely not. I've been a Democrat for a long time. I was, the last Democrat who was actually in the Senate from Alabama was Howell Heflin, who was my old boss. Worked for him in his first year. He was a mentor of mine. I'm kind of a throwback a little bit to his ways. So I am who I am, and I'm where I am, and I got elected as a Democrat, and I'm going to get reelected as a Democrat, and I'll serve the next term as a Democrat.
Well, let's talk about whether you'll get reelected at all in Alabama, Senator. We talked about the analysts, right, the number crunchers, the pundits, and I know you don't care about what they say, but this is pretty real. We're going to talk about your voting record too a little bit more. Your opponent, look, in your special election, you ran against Roy Moore. The country knows Roy Moore now. He's a former Supreme Court judge in Alabama and was accused credibly by several women before that race of sexual assault and molesting them in some cases when they were minors. Even President Trump at one point came out against Roy Moore. And now in Alabama, Jeff Sessions, the longtime senator from your state, former attorney general, is now playing footsie with the idea that he might jump into the race. Roy Moore says he's in. If Jeff Sessions decides to get in that race and presumably gets the nomination, how much harder does it make it for you? I mean, he's a legacy politician in Alabama.
Well, Todd, to be honest with you, I think it's kind of absurd for analysts and others to play the if game, because we don't know. I've known Jeff for a long time. I thought the president treated him incredibly unfairly, even though he and I disagree on so many things politically. But who knows whether or not Jeff Sessions will get in the Republican primary. That's going to be a very divisive primary right now. Everybody is doing – the only issue for the Republicans right now is who is going to be Donald Trump's best friend, who is going to be Donald Trump's best lapdog. They're not in any way talking about the independence that they would need to vote in the United States Senate to do their constitutional duty. So rather than playing the F game, our primary is early. It's in March. We're going to know fairly soon who the field will be set in this, what I expect to be a really divisive primary on their part. And then by March or middle of April, we'll know who the nominee is. So let's kind of hold those questions till we say, see who we're running against. Because right now there's six or seven people in that race.
But what do you and your people talk about when you talk about the general in general? I mean, President Trump is very popular in Alabama. That's not going to change between now and the general election. He is on the ballot, and whoever does run is going to run, I assure you, as a very strong ally of President Trump and his message. What's your plan for confronting President Trump's real popularity in Alabama?
Well, it's not a question of confronting his popularity. It's a question of confronting those things that he has done that hurts the state of Alabama. We're not going to confront the popularity. What we're trying to show is that, look, you can vote for the president of the United States. You can vote for President Trump. You can vote for somebody else. But the fact of the matter is, you need a United States senator that has your back. You need a United States senator that believes in one Alabama for everyone, not just a special interest, not just Republicans, not just Democrats. That's what I think that we can do. So we came into the Senate. I came into the campaign. I came into the Senate saying, you know, we're going to look at every issue. We're going to decide what I believe is the right thing, that I can justify the votes that I take. Not everybody will agree with it. But I want people at the end of the day to look at me and look at the record I've done. They're not always going to like it. But, you know, there's a lot of things that the president has done that's hurting. Alabama soybean farmers right now are getting killed because of the tariffs, and they don't want handouts from the federal government. The tariff issue is a big issue in Alabama. We're a manufacturing state. We're an exporting state. Automobile manufacturers are very nervous. Steel and aluminum has been helped somewhat, but everybody else is getting hurt by these tariffs. So we're going to look at those issues that directly affect the people of Alabama, and we will say, you may like one issue with the President of the United States, but Doug Jones has been fighting for you on another issue, including your health care, where the president has been trying to sabotage the ACA, and we've got a million people under age 65 with pre-existing conditions.
Well, Doug Jones...
And they're set to lose that if this lawsuit is successful.
Well, Doug Jones is more pro-Trump than the vast majority of Democrats in the Senate. Certainly, Doug Jones has voted with the president about 40% of the time in the Senate. And it makes some sense, maybe, since he represents such a conservative state. We mentioned that you're pro-choice. You're pro-background checks. And one area where you voice some disagreement with the president surrounds this firearm debate in the United States. You've voiced your thoughts during your very first speech on the Senate floor last March. Let's go back.
It is our responsibility, our duty, to have a serious discussion about guns and gun safety. But that conversation has to be twofold. We must acknowledge the deadly consequences that can follow when a gun is in the wrong hands, but also recognize and respect the freedom to own and enjoy guns by law-abiding citizens as guaranteed by the Second Amendment to the Constitution.
Senator, let's transcend the debate about the Second Amendment and whether people value their guns. I know a lot of people in Alabama do value their guns. What is your plan? What are you going to take to the people of Alabama to assure them that you'll work to lower the injury rate and the death rate from firearms in this country? We're stuck at about 35,000, 36,000 deaths a year from firearms in America. A lot of those proportionally, I'm sure, are in Alabama because there are a lot of guns in Alabama. So what are you telling your constituents about this health issue?
Well, I think we need to study it as a health issue. I've talked about the fact that for so many years, we have not looked at this as a health issue, but we should be looking at it as a health issue. We need to study the root causes of a lot of this. And yeah, I think there are some things that we can do if people would just not go to their corners every time the word gun is mentioned. And let's talk about this in the framework of gun safety and gun violence. What can we do? And there's a combination of things. I think we can do better and more background checks to keep guns out of the hands of wrong people. I think we can close some of the loopholes that are in state law, that in federal law right now, the so-called boyfriend loophole that would prevent folks that are domestic partners from owning a gun if they have been involved or convicted of a domestic violence dispute. I think we can look at some of and they've been called different things now. I still refer to them as something called a red flag law, where a number of states are enacting these. I think Florida, a pretty conservative state, also has enacted something like this, in which, you know, people that see a problem with an individual can go to a court to say, let's get this man's or woman's firearms away from them for a little bit until we can find out what's going on with them. Mental health is a huge issue, Todd, and that is something that I think is the most difficult thing to tackle in this country. We lose veterans, we lose people every day to suicide, and we've got to figure out how to do this, and we need to do it as a health issue. I think you hit it right on the head when we can look at this and not look at this as strictly a Second Amendment issue, but as a health issue as well.
We've been hearing from 1A listeners. They want to ask Senator Doug Jones questions, and this one apparently comes from Birmingham, Alabama, from a self-described phone operator. What is the senator's strategy for broadening higher-paying job opportunities for young workers without a college degree in Alabama?
That's a great question. I'm so glad somebody sent that in, because we have been promoting a lot of our junior colleges, our trade schools, to try to do the kind of very things that they're talking about. Not everyone can get a college degree. Not everyone is cut out for a four-year college degree, at least at the age of 18. They may be later after they mature a little bit more. What we're trying to do is work with these colleges and the two-year colleges, as well as the manufacturing plants and other private industry around here, to seek these apprenticeships, to go into the high schools, to show them what we've got. You know, Todd, I worked at U.S. Steel a long, long time ago, and it was incredibly hot. It was incredibly dirty. The manufacturing plants that we have now, like Honda and Mercedes and some of the big manufacturing plants and all their robotics, it's a different world. And these kids need to understand that you can go into these jobs, get trained very quickly, be on the floor of one of these manufacturing plants and make $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 with good benefits, and you can still further your education if that's what you want to do later on. We've been doing all we can to promote that. Hmm. I was one of the co-sponsors that reauthorized the Perkins CTE grants last year. We are doing as much as we can to promote that kind of workforce development, because, quite frankly, you can't expand the jobs in Alabama if you don't have that workforce. And I hear it all the time from our businesses here, that we need folks that will come to work for us in these really good paying jobs, and we will help train them. And so we're trying to do everything we can, not only legislatively, but in part just talking about it and using the Senate office as a bully pulpit to promote this.
Well, Senator, that question from a phone operator in Alabama was right over the middle of the plate for you. I might sound like a cynical old political reporter, but that didn't come from one of your campaign operatives, did it?
I have no, I don't think, I'm not even sure too many of those. We don't have that many operatives, but
worth
it's an
asking.
Important issue. It's really an important issue. I think it came because it is an important issue. It could have easily have come from someone who owns a business in Alabama, because we hear it all the time.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to ask you about immigration. It's an enormous issue in this country. You watch the Democratic debates of the presidential candidates from your party, I'm sure. Senator, what's your view on what's going on at the southern border, how the Trump administration is handling migrants and asylum seekers? We had a report from the Inspector General of DHS out just yesterday, overcrowding, people packed into enclosures for days that were meant to only hold people for hours, packed into places with no room to lay down, squalid conditions, as I mentioned, detainees begging to be let out of what amounted to cages. How do you view what's going on at the southern border now, both in detention and the management of asylum seekers who are trying to get over the border?
It's horrible. It's horrible conditions. We're a better country than that. It is out of control, and something needs to help. You know, we passed a $4.9 billion bill last week that the president signed that will hopefully start getting some money to get some relief to the humanitarian crisis.
Except a lot of the people in your party, Senator, didn't like that bill. It had money, yes, but it didn't have what they call accountability for what's going on.
Well, you know, Todd, you can't always get, it's kind of the Mick Jagger view of politics. You can't always get what you want, but if you try sometime, you just might find done, you get what you need. There were people in the Democratic Party that didn't like that, but that bill would not have passed without overwhelming Democratic support because people felt the need to get something, some urgency. We can deal with additional problems down there at some point, but this was an urgent need, and that bill passed because of overwhelming Democratic support in the Senate and support in the House. It would not have passed without the Democrats supporting that. So
Other Democrats are not running in Alabama, and you are, and I get it. But is your party moving too far to the left in your estimation on immigration?
No, not at all. You've got loud voices on the left, and I appreciate those voices. They are very concerned about what's going on that. But I think what you saw, the Democratic Party as a whole rise up to pass this emergency bill the other day. That's the gist of the Democratic Party. That's where we've got to go. We've got to have an immigration system that tries to work. Unfortunately, right now, immigration has been weaponized again. Like so many other things in this tribally, politically divided country, it's become weaponized. And there are good people on both sides of this aisle that are trying to figure out ways that we can find common ground to get some kind of immigration reform. Ironically, what we're seeing with the humanitarian crisis now is because that issue about how to handle asylum seekers, legitimate asylum seekers, and ferret out those that are not legitimate asylum seekers, have been for my entire time in the Senate put on the back burner because we're just arguing over a wall. Mm. You know, a wall is not going to stop these asylum seekers. So many of these people get to the border and they stop and they wait sometimes for an hour or two for a Border Patrol agent to come and arrest them. These people are fleeing countries. Immigration reform has to be not only what our laws are doing, but how we're trying to help countries in Central America where people are trying to flee violence.
All right, Senator, I want to
take a look at that.
And I want to make sure I ask you about a couple of other issues as well.
Sure.
You're a member of the Armed Services Committee. The 4th of July is tomorrow. As you know, I'm sure, President Trump has planned a parade that will incorporate military tanks, military flyovers, already seen on the streets of D.C. Critics say that the president is politicizing the military and politicizing the 4th. What do you think?
Oh, there's no question about what's going on with a parade in Washington is a political event. They're giving away tickets to Republican donors and big supporters of the president where everybody else is standing way down the line. This is purely a political event, and it is very unfortunate. This Independence Day, the July 4th holiday, should be as American as possible. It should not be a Republican, a Democrat, or a military show. This should be an American show. And unfortunately, I think the president has decided to make it a Donald Trump show.
Well,
and that's very, very unfortunate.
Well, Senator, I got to go in just a minute. But you're from Alabama, and we're coming up on the 50-year anniversary of the moon landing. Alabama, of course,
yes,
is home to NASA Marshall Space Flight Center, Rocket City, birthplace of the Saturn V that took us to the moon.
Right.
We've got a great Apollo tribute coming up here in just a minute. We only have a couple of seconds, but how is Huntsville celebrating?
Huntsville is going to be rocking up there. The Rocket City will be rocking. It was such a big deal. I'm so proud of Huntsville and Alabama's contribution to the space industry. I wish we could have more things like that, that all Americans could celebrate. We need more positive things like that, that Americans can celebrate, not just those things that divide us.
Oh, well, they got to be pretty happy in Huntsville. The Trump administration says we're going back to the moon, and that's big dollars for Huntsville, right?
We're all happy whenever NASA, whenever our military can excel, Huntsville excels, Alabama excels. And so we're very happy with the way the NASA and the administrator there is looking to try to expand our space exploration. I think it will also do a lot for America's psyche and bring us together.
Senator Doug Jones, Democrat representing Alabama, running for re-election in 2020, doesn't yet know who his opponent will be. Will it be Roy Moore, his opponent in 2017? Will it be Jeff Sessions, former senator? Will it be somebody else? We'll be watching. Senator Jones, thank you for being on 1A and happy 4th. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Todd. I really enjoyed being here.
Senator Doug Jones there. Well, as I promised, still to come, stick with us because we have something very, very special from our celestial neighborhood coming up just after this break. As I mentioned, this month marks the 50th anniversary of Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong's trip to the moon. And don't forget Mike Collins, command module pilot as well. That might be old news to you, but it was a moment that gripped the nation and the world in tense and excited silence. If you weren't there, you have no idea what it was like. I wish I was there in some ways. Well, we're going to take you through all of the key 13 minutes of that, finally and dramatically, up until the moment when the Eagle lands on the moon. That's next on 1A. Stay close.